the jukebox played Miss Dorothy Moore, I knew that it was him without a doubt. I said, the road's been my redeemer. I never know just what on earth I'll find. In the faces of a stranger, I
Hey, good morning. Marlena Smith here. Welcome to the Electronic Salon. It's 6 minutes after the hour of nine. You're tuned to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7, right here in River City. I want to thank everybody who pledged during Pledge Drive. And just as a reminder, if you haven't yet mailed in your pledge, then it's important and it's time for you to do that. The station really depends on your generosity, and that's how we go on. You know, we're not corporate, so you got to help out. What you just heard was Jesus in New Orleans, a group called Over the Rind. This is from their Ohio album, Karen Berquist and Linford Dittweiler. These are really interesting folks. I've played a lot of their music at Christmas. They do that beautiful rendition of Silent Night and Ave Maria and some of those others. Karen Berquist is an amazing stylist, as you can tell, and they write a lot of their own music. They were here Monday night, the same night Richard Thompson was here, so it was a real amazing doubleheader for good music, and I made the choice to go to Over the Rind. If you like their music, you can go to a website called Over the Rind, one word, and it's R-H-I-N-E, as in the river, overtherind.com, or you can go to backporchrecords.com, and I'll play some more of their music, I think, maybe at the break. Today is the second Friday, so we have Dr. Stephen Bailey here, naturopathic physician, and of course, as always, you need to remember that these are informational shows. You should seek out medical advice from your own private provider, and you should not be self-medicating or any of those kinds of things. So this is information. You take it to your primary provider and discuss it. We're also hopeful that we'll have Barbara Brenner on the phone. She's from Rachel's Friends. She's very actively involved in breast cancer issues. She's an attorney from San Francisco who herself has dealt with breast cancer, and she is with a group called Breast Cancer Action. Barbara Ehrenreich has something interesting to say about her, if I can find it in this pile of literature that I just got. Barbara Ehrenreich says, before you give another nickel or dime to breast cancer research, think before you pink. And the idea is, I think, for these folks that corporate research isn't necessarily, or pharmaceutical research isn't necessarily going to solve this problem, that breast cancer has a huge relationship to environmental toxins, and that we need to start focusing on that side of the equation, one of my long-held beliefs. And if we don't do that, we're not going to solve the problem. And just as a sidebar note, there is an oil slick in the Willamette River this morning that has been reported. It appeared about 5 o'clock in the morning. Nobody knows where it came from. It's somewhere between the Hawthorne Bridge and the Steel Bridge. And I guess folks will try to figure out what that's all about. But that's our river. And I see people fishing in that river all the time. And they get sturgeon or whatever. And I'm just amazed because I don't think it's a river we ought to be eating fish out of. We have a full moon tonight. It's going to be a real interesting one, so I'm going to tell you a couple things about it. First of all, it's Taurus and Scorpio. It's about 22 degrees, and Taurus and Scorpio are pretty powerful in combination. They are often correlated with earthquakes. We had something off the coast a week or so ago, seven, I think. Or no, it was off the coast of Tonga, and there were tsunami warnings. But we're in that time, and we live in the Ring of Fire, so that's what it is. Reading from the Mountain Astrologer, I have two sections to share with you. First of all, high mental activity will fly over the emotional Scorpio-Taurus moon landscape today when Mercury will sextile Uranus in the morning. These planets represent two levels of nervous activity that can sometimes overamp the mind. For those of you who understand that, that means you get these speedy thoughts. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means you're getting a lot of, let's say, electrical energy or cosmic energy. But the sextile brings congruence that allows ordinary information, which is Mercury rule, to work effectively with extraordinary ideas, which is Uranus. Still, the tides of emotion will continue to rise throughout the day, culminating with a full moon tonight, 11:52 p.m. Neptune, the planet of illusion, will square this lunation, generating a tsunami of feeling that may wash away all reason. Ecstasy and terror, illusion and illumination can fill the evening with drama. Put yourself in a safe place to ride this wave, dance, romance, music, or meditation, rather than trying to block the powerful forces at work right now. Now, the full text for this in Mountain Astrologer says the following. The full moon reveals what has been hidden. Our consciousness ebbs and flows like the moon, bringing some realities to light, others into shadow, and some things we never see at all. The light of any full moon is only a tiny fraction of the electromagnetic spectrum, a mere 2% of the rays that affect us. Infrared, X-ray, ultraviolet, and many other emissions are invisible. The full moon provides an opportunity to realize what has been influencing us below the threshold of our awareness. Because the sun is in Taurus, it illuminates the physical realities of life. How much beauty and peace is there in our lives? Are we in touch with the earth, with our bodies? Do we have what we need? Do we want what we have? Oh, good question. For millennia, many religions urge the denial of the body, the separation of spirit and matter. Now, modern physics speaks of an interconnected reality long described by both Eastern and Western mystics. We know now that as the earth changes, we change, and vice versa. You know, it's that whole microcosm thing. Back to the text here. For a fascinating exploration of how the Schumann resonance, the resonance frequency of the earth, affects human consciousness, you can visit a website titled Nexus, N-E-X-U-S, magazine, all one word, .com. Or you can read Itzhak Bentov, B-E-N-T-O-V, Stalking the Wild Pendulum, on the mechanics of consciousness. The moon in Scorpio highlights what's dead or dying in our lives. Okay, so that's the polar contrary, sun in Taurus, moon in Scorpio. Like water, matter holds the energetic patterns of whatever it has been exposed to, whether it's a personal item or a mountain. Gifts are strongly charged with the energy of both the giver and the recipient. Take an inventory of your life and weed out anything that doesn't support who you are now. The Scorpio moon is about cleaning house physically and emotionally. Purge your old resentments. Heal old wounds. There's power in the dark in our unconscious, and this full moon illuminates where we may need to face some demons and albatrosses. Neptune, the planet of illusion at 20 degrees Aquarius, will square the sun and the moon in Taurus and Scorpio, pushing us to release attachments and fears. The mythic god of the sea fogs distinctions so that we may sense the underlying unity in all things. In Aquarius, Neptune supports the recognition of unity and diversity, encouraging each person to embody his or her unique expression of the divine and to see the divine in others. Both illusion and intuition are heightened during this full moon and beyond as Neptune exactly squares the sun on May 10th and approaches his station retrograde on May 22. Planets do not literally retrograde, but because of the vast difference in their orbit and rate of speed from our perspective, they appear to slow down, stop, creep backward, move forward again slowly, etc. As a planet hovers in this so-called retrograde, the combination of that particular planet and sign becomes concentrated and very intense, like a searchlight, sweeping the sky very slowly. So we're able to see more clearly what is there or what is not there. Neptune will soon retrograde at 20 Aquarius and turn direct again at the end of October in Aquarius. Chiron, the wounded healer asteroid, is also nearing the yearly retrograde on May 15th at 10 degrees Aquarius. As the archetype of the wounded healer, Chiron in Aquarius has been clearing the way for all people to express their unique abilities and more easily join with others who share their ideals. As Chiron and Neptune make their passage through Aquarius, those born with Pluto and Leo, which is the baby boomer generation, are fulfilling their unique part in assisting the birth of the Aquarian age. Chiron will be retrograde until October 12 when he turns direct at 4 Aquarius. He again reaches 10 degrees in January 2007. The Sabian symbols for this full moon suggest that we are on yet another threshold of transformation. For 23 degrees Taurus, a jewelry shop filled with valuable gems, the social confirmation of natural excellence. For 23 degrees Scorpio, a rabbit metamorphoses into a nature spirit, which indicates the rising of animal drives to a higher level. For Neptune at 20 degrees, a large white dove bearing a message, watch for your dove, pay special attention to your intuition, and follow it. Remember, fear defeats more people than any other thing in the world. That from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and the whole thing from The Mountain Astrologer. Take it for what it's worth for you. Also want to remind you, Sunday is Mother's Day. Honor mothers and fathers and all the other good people that are out there. And like that, I'm going to go to Stephen now for a minute. Stephen?
Well, good morning to you, Marlena.
Well, you're just not even on mic. Go ahead, keep talking.
Good morning, and welcome to all of you out there in KBOO land.
Stephen, I'm going to let you talk for just a brief moment. I'm going to pull up the phone, and I think we have Barbara Brenner, okay?
And I was glad. I'm right in the middle of reading Emerson's spiritual writings, so some very interesting things on the microcosm, macrocosm theories. Chiron C. Hiram was the mason that was sent out to build the temple in Solomon's days. Interesting Christ-like figure of early religion. Very powerful influence cosmologically. Schumann grids are real interesting. And next year, Marlena, I pledge that I will be bringing in some topics of pendulum and dowsing and talking about some of that inner knowledge. But we now have Barbara Brenner, and we're going to be talking about breast cancer. Welcome to KBOO, Barbara.
Barbara, you want to... Hi, Barbara. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Can you hear us?
I can hear fine.
Great. I told our listeners at the top of the hour, just briefly, that you are working with the whole issue of breast cancer and the Breast Cancer Awareness Network. Can you tell us, tell our listeners what your concerns are and why you're not satisfied with the way things are going?
Well, I think I can say this simply. I imagine that all of your listeners are aware of breast cancer. We are way past the point of awareness. The question is, what do we do now? And one of our major concerns at Breast Cancer Action, we're a national grassroots organization based out of San Francisco, and I'm looking forward to being in Portland this weekend to work with our friends at Rachel's Friends. One of our major concerns is that there are a lot of companies now that put a pink ribbon on a product and say, buy my product because we care about women. And people are not encouraged to look past what those surfaces to what's really going on around pink ribbon marketing. Some of that is fine, some of it is not, and some of it gets down to something that we call pink washing, which involves companies that put a pink ribbon on their product on the one hand and say they care about women, at the same time produce a product or produce a product in a way that actually we're concerned is contributing to the epidemic.
Barbara, Saul Epstein's book, The Politics of Cancer, came out in the early 1980s, and for 19 years I've been on KBOO talking about the lack of preventative, the lack of awareness of what's going on with contributors to cancer, and talking about the continuing strength of the linkage of pesticides, petrochemical and organochemical products with breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer. And we continue to have these remarkable Race for the Cure events with tens of thousands of people. We continue to raise tens and hundreds of millions of dollars for research looking for that magic drug or silver bullet. I'm familiar with Rachel's Friends and with BCA. Can you tell us a little bit about how you folks differ from what's going on with the mainstream media at breast cancer?
Well, I can say that a lot of how we differ is in our name. I mean, we're not called Breast Cancer Action by accident. We actually think we are way past time to put pretty pictures on cancer. As I usually say, if cancer is a gift, to whom would you give it? Breast cancer is a life-threatening disease. It's killing 40,000 women a year. And even the women who don't die are going through horrendous treatments. I don't know how many of your readers saw this morning's New York Times, but all of this is an evolving disaster in many ways. And as long as we pretend that this is a curable problem, B, a pretty thing, something you sort of just, you know, get patted on the head and get through, we will never get the answers we need. And the answers we need have to do with what in the environment is making so many people sick, and what can we do to eliminate those environmental triggers.
And what do we know about the environment, Barbara? What do you think are the major contributors?
Well, we know a great deal, and actually Breast Cancer Action has co-produced with an organization called the Breast Cancer Fund a document called State of the Evidence, What Do We Know About the Environmental Links to Breast Cancer. That's available from Breast Cancer Action. People can find it online at bcaction.org. And it's a collection of the existing evidence that we know of. And I'd say that what we know comes down to, I would say, three major categories. One is ionizing radiation. We know that ionizing radiation, the kind you get with a medical x-ray, causes breast cancer. That does not mean that everybody who gets an x-ray gets breast cancer. But we know that radiation is a carcinogen, and the irony is we use it to detect breast cancer with mammography, sometimes successfully. We use it to treat breast cancer, and it's also a carcinogen. So radiation, very well established. I think the other category that by now should be widely accepted, even in the scientific community, is estrogen. We know from a lot of studies and from the so-called known risk factors for breast cancer, things like when you started menstruating, when you stopped menstruating, when you have your babies, those things that get repeated all the time as risks for breast cancer. What they have in common is your internal exposure to your own estrogens if you're a woman. And we know that the more estrogen exposure you have, the higher your risk of breast cancer. Now, what that links us to is a number of things in the environment. Some organochlorine pesticides actually function as estrogens when they enter your body. One of the big problems we have is many people probably see that Yoplait, our friends at General Mills, do a breast cancer thing every fall, where if you buy pink Yoplait containers and you clean off the caps and you send them to General Mills for 39 cents on your envelope, they will give 10 cents to the Komen Foundation, which raises a lot of money for Komen. That's great. But what people don't know is that all of General Mills' milk products, all of them, all of their dairy products, are made from dairy that where the cows have been treated with BGH, or bovine growth hormone. Now, the public actually can change this. We firmly believe that it is in the power, it's in our hands as consumers to change this. And one way they can do it is to stop buying that stuff and to tell Yoplait why you're doing it. And think about this. This is the other beauty of the Yoplait container. And I will talk about a lot of this at the presentation I'm going to give for Rachel's friends on Saturday night. If you decided you really like this Yoplait campaign and you don't really care about the BGH and you just really want to support breast cancer awareness, and you ate 3 containers of Yoplait a day for the 4 months of the campaign, the total for breast cancer would be $36. It would be really easier to write a check and probably better for your health.
You mentioned that Barbara is speaking Saturday, May 13th.
Tomorrow night. Portland State University, Lincoln Hall, $5 donation, and there are some amenities for out-of-towners, and then a Sunday potluck breakfast, reserve seats at that for the first 25 responders.
And that's 7:30 tomorrow night, right, if you're looking at that.
Barbara, is there anything else you want to say? I know you're on a tight and busy schedule.
Well, we all are, but I guess I really do want to reiterate, I think, Marlena, that it is in the power of people who care to change all that's mm-hmm. going on. And we've seen it with every change in breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Everything that has ever happened in breast cancer has happened because people demanded it. And it is now time for the public to demand that we look beyond the pink ribbons to what's really going on.
Have you been looking at plasticizers and plastics that get into dairy and how they're estrogen fake receptors? Are you looking at cell phones that people are wearing in their pockets next to their breast tissue?
We don't do research. We're an advocacy organization. I know there are a lot of people looking at plasticizers. Phthalates in particular have been a great concern in the breast cancer world.
What?
And phthalates, which are softened plastics, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S.
Oh, okay, and where would you find those? In the
plastic bags? You find them in, one of the places you find them is in a lot of cosmetics.
Mm.
And people need to understand that when cosmetics companies promote breast cancer awareness, they're hiding something. I will talk about all of this in greater detail in the talk I give for Rachel's friends. But all of these things are of concern. You know, that we're so able now to produce new things. Technology has really shown the ability to produce new things quickly, and to not understand the long-term consequences is obviously a very big problem, because if you look around at the number of people you know who have breast cancer or other cancers or other life-threatening or chronic diseases, there's some very significant problem here. And Breast Cancer Action looks through the lens of breast cancer to the wider issue of public health.
Mm-hmm. The book Stephen referenced, Sam Epstein, about cancer, that I also read back in the 80s, one of the most important points he made was that most cases of cancer are environmentally induced. They don't have the kinds of causation that we're told to believe, you know. And the concern was that if we don't clean up the environment, we're not going to do anything about cancer. And I'm noticing now, 20, 25 years later, that almost nobody talks about the environmental link to cancer anymore. It's all the emphasis is on technology and pharmaceuticals.
Well, it would actually depend on who you're listening to. You know, it's very interesting. Portland has just yesterday, I think, passed a really terrific work plan on precautionary principle and
right.
how to start putting public health before profit mm-hmm. in ways that will actually protect the public health. I think certainly you're right, Marlena, that if you look in the mainstream press, you think about who has the attention of the public mostly. In a big picture, nobody talks about this. But at the grassroots level, there's an enormous amount of activity going on. It's happening in Portland. It's happening in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's happening everywhere in the country. And it's that work at the community level that will drive the change at the top. I really believe that. And I think Sam Epstein believes it. I mean, Sam's book has been revised since the 1980s. You know, he's done great work. He's exposed a lot of nonsense. And the more people who know about Epstein's work, Breast Cancer Action's work, Rachel's Friend's work, the sooner we will be at the end of this nonsense. And having had breast cancer myself at 41...
Boy, that's young.
Yeah, but not as... I mean, there's an article in the paper today, somebody has died at 37, and we... Younger and younger.
Mm-hmm.
I firmly believe that this can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
How's
your health now?
Knock on wood, I seem to be fine.
I'm knocking with you.
Thank you. And, you know, I just figure if I keep moving, nobody will catch me.
Okay. Hey, Stephen, any final remark?
I just wanted to bring up the phthalates because we're talking about early menarche. Walter Crinion's done a lot of talking with Barbara Walters on this. Phthalates are the softer plastics. They're found in the microwavable formula bottles, and in Europe and other places we've documented children getting breast development at age 2 or 3. The earlier age of breast cancer seems to be associated with some of this, and just for the listeners, we'll talk more after the show, but the plastic that we use over our sandwiches, over our cooking,
mm-hmm.
these are things that the public needs to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
What is BCA doing on informing the public of some of the risks?
If you actually go to this is a conversation we have wherever we do public speaking, because people always want to know what they can do to protect themselves. Hello? So you can people who go to bcaction.org, which is our website, can find there under a Get Informed tab information on healthier practices for the home and elsewhere. So we have fact sheets on the environment and breast cancer. We just try to get this information out to whomever we have the opportunity to speak.
Barbara, I want to thank you. Again, the event is Barbara Brenner of Breast Cancer Action tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m. that Saturday evening, Portland State University, Lincoln Hall, $5 donation. Refreshments will be served. There are options for out-of-towners and a Sunday potluck for the first 25 who choose to join with Barbara. Barbara, any final remarks?
Just to thank you all for caring so much about this.
Thank you for doing the work.
Take care.
Take good care of yourself. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Stephen?
Well, we're back on KBOO, and this topic and any other topic you want, you can call in at 231-8187, and we'll take your phone calls, your comments, your concerns. This will be my last show, and I think Marlena finishes up with the month of May and then takes her summer sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in September. But this, since I've done 3 shows in a row that really didn't have call-ins, we thought we'd open up the lines to you today. That's 231-8187, of course, area code 503.
Let's try to use the 231-8187. I think that's the back line. It's easier for the front desk. 8187. 231-8187.
Breast cancer, one of the things you didn't talk about was CAT scans. We have this mammography and we used to be taught in medical school that mammograms didn't give much information before the age of 40. And it appears in dwelling behind the scene that the maximum radiation exposure that you can get from mammograms, at least the old equipment, that how many millirads you had, was that if you started at age 40 and went every other year, by 62 or 65, you'd had all the radiation you could legally have. I think they've reduced the exposure, but there's some significance there. But the other aspect is once someone has breast cancer and has been treated and may or may not have had radiation therapy, there is a high level of CAT scans, computerized axial tomographies, high exposure of radiation in this type of film that gives segmental pictures. And there have been some studies saying that CAT scans are hugely negative to the human body and providing a huge degree of radiation exposure. There are things that you can do. We fortunately have markers of the CA125 marker for detecting whether we might suspect a reactivity, a lack of remission in the breast cancer, but then this also creates a lot of fear around it because these markers that we see, like this prostate-specific antigen PSA for the prostate, can go up with inflammation. They can bring on a lot of fear, and Marlena mentioned Emerson's quote about fear and its devastation, and I think that we have to have the ability to keep our hormones regulated by a good state of mind, and I think it's incumbent in any therapy you choose to find one that feels good and to minimize the fear, accentuate the positive as much as possible. So there are a lot of things that can be done to augment what's going on, but one of the most important things is to be aware. And part of that awareness is looking to that doctor within, listening to your body, trying to get in touch with what your body's communicating with you. And another is looking at what you're putting into your body, because certainly Barbara and many others have talked about the fact that a lot of things in our foods are promoters of cancer, of disease, at least 70% of the disease, according to some studies, are contributed directly from the foods. And it's not that we have disease caused by broccoli or disease caused by carrots. If they're of an organic nature, we're typically seeing that they prevent these diseases, particularly if they're not overcooked and provide the vitamins and enzymes that help the body to restore its natural health. But one of the biggest things in breast cancer is the organochemicals. The prostate, the ovaries, the breasts have what are called receptor sites. They're like parking lots that certain vehicles, in this case hormones, can park in. And when estrogen parks in this site, it communicates information. Just as when you put a CD into a CD player, it communicates whatever is recorded on that compact disc. When a hormone goes into this site and parks, it communicates information that in the case of estrogen is associated with our fertility and the monthly cycle of changes in our physiology and our bodies. But when these organic chemicals park in this parking lot, they don't pull out as easily. So, you know, it would be terrible if every parking lot had cars that broke down and never left, but that's sort of the analogy that we've got with some of these organic chemicals that mimic estrogen. But it's also, and unlike a nice melodious Across the Rhine band, I guess that was the name of the band that we had that was playing that beautiful music.
Over the Rhine.
That it is pure static. It is information that is going into the receptor intelligence of the cells that are supposed to be receiving this nice harmonious information from our hormones, and it is confusing. And this is one of the definitive aspects of cancer, is a totally confused genetic activity of the cell in which it loses its ability to know that it has a purpose in unity with the entire body, to be part of a team effort of interrelationships of cells. And these chemicals that are nothing but static create a de-differentiation, or we talk about it as dysplasia or anaplasia, a total confusion in which the cell goes back to a root reproductive only source where it continues to just reproduce generically. And that's where we start to see the tumors, the masses, the growths. So it is very important to, as much as possible in my belief system, remove the inorganic concentrated pesticides, and ironically that can be the genetically modified soy, and soy is supposed to be helpful for breast cancer, but it's now going to be a sponge for chemicals under the way that they're doing corporate agriculture. But it also means eating lower on the food chain. The higher on the food chain, the mammals, the fish, the milk products, the dairy, the higher the concentration of the pesticides, and that is significant. Let's take our first caller.
Hang up now.
We're at 231-8187. I guess we just lost that caller. 231-8187 at KBOO. Do we have somebody else, Marlena? Hi, are you on the air? Okay, we're going to go ahead and continue to talk. Marlena, last show, two shows ago, we talked about toxic molds, and I did a cable show last month on toxic molds, and I'd like to thank our listeners. I understand that an awful lot of you called the mayor's office. I still haven't been satisfied with the way the city's responding to these smaller buildings. The hour before this show, they talked about environmental soundness, bike issues, other aspects. We do have green buildings. We do have LEED programs, the new environmental building designs for the large buildings to make buildings more energy efficient, but we don't see that in the small row house construction that's going on, the apartment construction. Not only are we not integrating as a city the ideal environmental and green space plans as much as we could, although there is some action in this area, but we're also still not taking that issue of molds. I talked about one case where a woman had had three CAT scans and seen 12 doctors, was doing terribly. We did get our guest with his dogs, One-Eyed Jack, out there, and they identified an isolated Stachybotrys, which is a very toxic mold. And this is something that's preventable through good building practices, and it's something that also contributes, like environmental toxins to breast cancer, to the cost of health. And it is part of being awake and looking at your environment. And we're going to take this caller now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm a vegetarian, and I heard you mention the soy products, and you mentioned perhaps the estrogens that are involved with that. And I was wondering if there's any research done on the phytoestrogens in soy products.
There is a lot of research done on the phytoestrogens. And when I mentioned soy, I was talking specifically at this time, since I was sort of dwelling on the negative, the risk factors with the genetically modified Monsanto version of soy, which has become more tolerant through their genetic engineering of Roundup pesticides that are organochemicals, so that they can have fewer people and more chemical sprays on the soy. The phytoestrogens, the protective elements of soybeans, are reduced by about 50% in these genetically modified soybeans. So just as you would prefer, if you weren't like you or me, a vegetarian, to eat free-range animals, if you're going to eat meat or to eat fish that wasn't produced in a fish farm, you would want to eat organic soy as much as possible. And there is no really hard, fast evidence that suggests that the phytoestrogens of organic soy will contribute to hormone-related cancers. So I think there hasn't been a large investment, because the monies of research generally tend to favor those products that can be used in medicine and pharmaceutical industry for profit, not just a general intellectual trying to understand what's going on. So there has been a little bit of research. Some people say once you've got a hormone-related breast cancer, you shouldn't eat soy. Very few people suggest that you shouldn't eat soy as a good quality food if you're getting organic soy, and realizing that there's a huge amount of processing that goes into soy. Soy protein powders are used as protein stretchers in all sorts of foods that you find in boxes, in hamburgers, in a lot of different foods, and those types of soy don't represent the whole quality food. You still there?
The caller's gone, but I had a question, Stephen. What about this notion that the phytoestrogens in soy interfere and block the absorption of some of these soft plastics that we talked about? Is that something you're aware of?
The absorption of soft plastics, the phthalates are found in everybody on this planet. You can't find anybody. The soybeans.
Does it help protect the breast tissue from absorbing the plastics?
The more cars you have that are able to go into these parking spaces, the more competitive displacement you've got. So getting these types of nutrients into your bloodstream, just like getting good quality zinc helps to displace cadmium and mercury and lead and arsenic, getting these phytoestrogens seems to be highly protective. And the absorption of the phytoestrogens is associated with digestive health. And that was the researchers' theory of why 400-plus days of antibiotic therapy doubled the risk of breast cancer in women in America, but 50 days of antibiotic therapy showed a 50% increase of breast cancer development, and they theorized that the lack of absorption of the phytoestrogens was the cause of the increased breast cancer, the lack of nutrient base. There are a number of theories behind this, but very definitely there are protective foods out there. Soy is, in an organic sense, is one of the well-researched ones, but we also have the particular essential fats, omega-3, omega-6, evening primrose, black currant, oil, and eating the rainbow, getting good quality whole foods, is very essential.
You know, Stephen, there's been a lot of discussion lately, especially with rising oil prices, that we need to alter our perspective from organic to local, and or both. But there's been a variety. When Howard Lyman was in town, there was a lot of literature, and one of the articles in one of the publications that was there really raised a sort of a thought-provoking piece about the varieties of kinds of health food stores, the varieties of kinds of available food. But the basic argument about local was that if you start supporting local, you're supporting the potential for healthier food that can go organic or not, but that is not processed and shipped long distances. And they named one of the major health food retailers that we now have in our town that brings a lot of products in from out of the area, and the energy costs and the impact on the environment kind of negate, apparently, the benefits of the food that we actually eat. I'm going to pick up another caller, and maybe you can respond.
We'll go ahead and take that caller, and I'll remember your question. Are you on the air? Hi. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and respond to Marlene. I think that there is very definitely an aspect of transportation of foods and the cost of the trucks. I think there's also an aspect of we as a consumptive and over-consumptive nation getting the high-quality food from South America and from other countries that aren't then fed to those people. First time I went to South America, I found down in Chile, of all places, mostly powdered instant coffee. They grow coffee beans, but they don't get to drink that coffee. It gets exported. So I think the aspect of third world exportation of foods has a bigger picture. And I think when we look at each other as our brothers and sisters, when we look at the borders as something that is arbitrary based on the basic fear and protectionism of a given country, and we then look at what we're doing to consume all of the prettiest produce, we have to look at that from at least I would choose to look at that from a moral issue. At the same sense, I think supporting a local farm that is going to be using petrochemicals and putting those into our drinking water is not something I would like to do. I would love to shop at the farmers markets and support those organic farms and encourage every farm to become transitional and then become organic. But I am not going to agree with Howard Lehman that it is better to buy a poison food locally.
It wasn't his point of view.
Yeah,
I need
okay,
to correct that.
Okay.
It was just a publication at
okay.
his event.
Yeah, thank you. That it is not better to buy a poison food and farming process locally than to buy and support an organic farmer in Montana or Texas or somewhere else where they are respecting the planet and giving us good quality foods. So I do agree. We need to be local. We need to consume less energy. Macrobiotic diet is a great way to go. We should eat seasonally. We shouldn't always have strawberries 12 months a year. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. You kind of hit on what I was going to say about we had a debate a while back when I was living down in California for a while. My friend was writing a paper, and he goes, well, do you want to buy, should we buy organic, or should we buy local and organic from California and other countries? And with this world global market, you know, we have strawberries grown in California and they're being shipped to England to be packaged and they come back to be sold. So if I'm going to go and buy local, there's a lot of problem with the local. They're using genetically modified seed. They might use a organic style growing, but they're still using the genetically modified seed. And I'm having a problem supporting local that's using the genetically modified seed, but they're using the organic standards of growing.
I don't know how widespread that is, and I think that the aspect of GMO foods not providing seeds for the next year is going to make it such that, like BST, the bovine somatotropin that created so much harm to the cows that it was given to, that most farmers outside of the corporate farm, the general corporate food agricultural system, chose not to use this. The cows produced enough milk, and if you lose the fertility of cows two generations down from this, you are losing money. So I think that we need to really educate and continue to try to stay away from the genetically modified foods as much as possible, but there may be some instances of organic agriculture using genetic seeds. I don't think that's widespread. I'd love to have more information from that.
Right. And, you know, I saw a study. They did a study about 6 months ago from three different countries. I think it was New Zealand, Austria, and something else. And they did it, and they said that the 55% from one study, 56% from the other study, and 57% of the other study, they wrote the same study, different countries, all said that over 50% of the rats that were eating genetically modified foods were dying of inflammation of the tissues. And I thought it was really amazing. And then that Monsanto came in and said, well, these lefty businesses, you know, we have studies ourselves. And it's like, man, so many studies, who do you believe? And I guess you just have to go with your heart. But my last statement is, I saw your show, Nature's Ways, about the toxic mold. Yeah, it was technically difficult, but I see that that show is going to be wonderful. And I came home and inspired me to look for mold. And really, I found a lot. And my children are doing much better now that I saw that show. And I just really thank you for that. And I thank you for what you're doing with Marlena. And I just wanted to throw that out there to you, Stephen.
Okay. Thank you very much. You know,
we really appreciate that, by the way. Thanks so much. And I appreciate you, Stephen. And I just want to say before we close out that this is a real gift. I mean, you have a vast amount of knowledge. I do as well. A lot of people here at KBOO do. And people come down here and we all volunteer for free to share this information because it's so important and because we're so connected to our community. And, Stephen, I just want to remind you and our listeners again how much I appreciate what you do to help keep us healthy.
Thank you very much, Marlena. And, you know, you'd love to be a fly on my shoulder sometime because my voice is known around town and people hear my voice and they come up and recognize me. And so often they say, what's it like to work with Marlena? I so love her. Isn't she great? And the reciprocity is there. I certainly appreciate being on this show, Marlena.
Thanks. It's definitely Mother's Day. We're nurturing each other here.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, that's okay. We need more nurturing, and I think we didn't get into some of the spiritual aspects of breast cancer and prostate cancer. I think that's something that really needs to be looked at.
A real interesting area to go.
You know, the breasts are not something that was created for pinups and for voyeurism and for the satisfaction of the eyes. The breasts were created to produce milk to feed infants. And there is a clear association with the aspect of a village and a family and what is instinctual within most people, which is to have a village and a family. And our society as a whole is not a village. We don't have that nurturing aspect. There is a great degree of violence against women in this society that is generally associated with the perversion of the respect for those aspects of sexuality and family, and a disrespect for the person as a brother or sister, as somebody that we should love and do unto as we want to have done unto us and as we would like. And there is an aspect of, as I've seen it, in breast cancer nationally, I think there's an aspect of the unfulfilled life that so many of us live in so many different ways. And so it's not just with this one disease. But I think when we look at what is going on in our society, you know, it's not only an aspect of removing poisons from the plant. It's an aspect of nurturing Gaia. It's an aspect of nurturing the soils. The truth of the matter is, in our discussion earlier about regional versus versus foods that have been brought in from a long distance, is that in the true cost of growing foods, organic wins out. It is only through subsidies and a lack of a bottom line calculation on the costs of the petrochemical fertilizer system that we believe that we're actually producing more nourishment for our society through those methods than through organic farming. There are many studies showing the top soil stays around longer, is actually built up in organic methods. We are not accessing the amount of cost that we subsidize. You know, there's a $3 gallon of gas out there, but we make fertilizers out of gasoline. That's the source, the agricultural system. It's part of the same method that has us, and you know, our
futures in plastics, my boy. I think that was the line. You know, can I just divert for just a tiny moment?
Surely.
Because we're getting down to the end here. I want to go back to this idea of the microwave. You know, I've been an opponent for a long time, and I'm not trying to interfere with anybody's commercial success here. But the health effects of microwaves have concerned me for a long time. I remember reading a study that someone did, a study of feeding rats. I think maybe Linton, who was one of the early pioneers in the field, fed rats microwave food, and they developed a lot of problems, real serious changes in their bodies. And that was enough for me to be very cautious. And it wasn't an industry-sponsored research piece. It was an independent research piece, which people need to start understanding. There's a difference in who does the research on what the outcomes may be. But I've long been concerned about this, and I see people at work all the time throwing food in plastic containers into microwaves and eating it. You and I know about the research about plasticizers, hot food, especially creamy foods, and how that creates problems when it's eaten. People wrapping things in plastic, food shows encouraging people to use that sticky plastic stuff to cover everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I got some dairy product, which I don't buy very often, but I got some that was wrapped in that fast freeze and had to scrape off every single surface of that food before I would even consider eating it, because you could see the plastic shining on the surface. And those kind of things really make me crazy.
Yeah.
So the microwave and health, what are your thoughts?
Well, there is infrared heat, as you said at the beginning of the show, that we get that's not visible from the sun, from the moon. We get ultraviolet light from the sun. That is a lot different than an X-ray, than gamma radiation. And that type of heat is the type of heat that's associated with food processing. The fire is not our best friend, although it is certainly a better friend than the microwave. When we come in with these electric fields, we are changing the chemical nature of our foods. And there is reason to be wary of it. I do not believe that there is a microwave-safe plastic container out there. And I know that people can label them as microwave-safe, and it makes me cringe to see the soft plastic wraps on foods. I have to keep my mouth shut. I can't just be a crusader that goes in there in a Quixote jousting with every windmill and say, you silly, sad, ignorant person, don't you know what you're doing to yourself? I could spend my whole day just doing nothing but going around to cafeterias and you know, even some of our health food stores have microwave there in the cafeterias. That amazed me, that a health food store that sells good quality health foods and commercial foods would have a microwave oven there for the public to use to go in and zap their food. So, no, I don't. I think you need to minimize the amount of microwave food you've got, and I think you need to get back to as much raw, fresh, whole foods as you can if you want to have a long, healthy life.
Stephen, we have one quick caller. We have just a couple minutes left. Caller, go ahead.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, ethyl acrylate is a component of plastic that I've worked with in the past, and after a severe injury, they implanted it in a bone in my face. Okay. Is there a way to, they used a plastic in my face to do that, and I developed a real serious intolerance to plastic in all my environments. Is there foods or things that you can use in nutritional ways to wash that? To help to cleanse your body from that.
Caller, is that like silicone?
Ethyl acrylate, I don't know, but it is the chemical component within plastic that I was found to be allergic to after that implantation.
I'll let Dr. Bailey answer.
Okay, well, the implantation, I would think that what we're talking about is a structural replacement, and ideally, although we had that terrible story of stealing cadaver bones on the East Coast for hip replacements, from mortuaries without them knowing that, but we would like to use something as natural and as common to the body as possible. There is the aspect that you can decrease over-inflammation in the body with a lot of substances, quercetin, picnogenol, vitamin C, bioflavonoids, a lot of foods that are anti-inflammatory, and this might help. You don't want to have to go to the steroid, suppress and kill the immune response. There is also a general understanding of the detoxification pathways in the liver that you'd want to be supporting as well. And it is not only the single cytochromes that deal with the specific toxin that might get leached and bring a systemic aspect, but it's the aspect of secondary hydrolysis, which is the main workhorse of getting toxins out of the system. That's going to be supported with zinc, selenium, magnesium, certain B vitamins, essential fats, and the body really helps to get toxins out by having high fiber and high water. The colon is the main avenue for most people of safely getting fatty organochemicals out of their system because they aren't typically going to be broken up into easily eliminable aspects, although you can measure DDTs and pesticides in the urine. The easiest avenue is through the lymph system and the portal drainage that you can have in the large intestine. So get those fibers. So vegetable juices are an excellent way to really optimize, organic vegetable juices, optimize the liver pathways for you. And if possible, at some point, see if there's an option, if this is a surgery that can be reversed, that there could be a safer material put in. But definitely there are a lot of things, probiotics as well for the digestive system, that you can do to decrease the severity of this overreactivity. I'm Dr. Stephen Bailey. It's been a great pleasure being with you again this year.
As well.
I'll be back with Marlena and you great listeners out there in this radio land come September of 06. And let's hope we're looking at better times. Enjoy the summer and have a blessed week.
Stephen, one final note. Thanks again for a great season, and thanks to our listeners for being actively involved in this process of learning how to be healthier and sharing that information and talking to their care providers. I mean, we're really pushing on the frontier here of integrative medicine, and that's really the whole goal. I think let's just put out as a theme, because May is the season of green growth. Let's put out this idea for people to process over the summer and to reflect on, to keep your gut healthy. Wouldn't that be a great sort of beginning point? Do things that keep your gut happy.
And keep your mind happy and do some gardening. The cheapest environmental aspect is to take that zucchini from your backyard, not from the farm out in Canby, and certainly not from the farm in Chile. But keep your gut healthy, and that means whole foods. Eat outside the box. Find stuff in nature's packagings, which means seeds and whole foods. Thanks, Marlena.
Thanks,
great,
Stephen.
Bye-bye. Great comment.
Bye. I just want to remind our listeners, it's 10 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 on the FM band here in Portland. Take a musical break.